He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
This is Katz at Night. John Katzimatidis here, the number one show at 5 o'clock, and we are covering most of the East Coast. We're a TriCast. We're on 970 AM, The Answer, WABC 770, and WLIR 107.1. And we have a powerful studio today. We have two common sense Democrats and another common sense Republican. We have Judge Richard Weinberg, common sense Democrat, and Governor David Patterson, another common sense Democrat. And we have Borough President of the Great Island of Staten Island, Vito Fisella. How are you guys?
We're great.
We're doing great, John. Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm sure you guys are going to have a lot of good news. And my sidekick, Lydia Serrano, I understand we have one great show today. Tell everybody what the show is all about.
We got an amazing show in addition to all the great guys right here in studio. We are going to have Rita Klavan on momentarily. She is former Governor Andrew Cuomo's lawyer.
She is a lawyer.
I'm sorry. She is the former governor's attorney. So he was the former governor. She is his attorney, and he is on a quest to clear his name. Then we'll have Larry Kudlow. Then, of course, we'll be talking to Ambassador John Bolton. Will Russia invade Ukraine? He'll have the latest. And
There's been breaking news that the president has said to all Americans in Ukraine, you better get out within 48 to 72 hours or else. And the last time he did that was Afghanistan.
Yeah. Right. And he's already said, Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, already said they're not sending in U.S. troops to save people. So get out now.
I'm saying to President Biden, we do not need another war.
Well, Biden and Putin are expected to talk tomorrow. How do you think that conversation will go, John?
I don't know. I really don't. I still think Putin is not going to invade. But oil went up to $95, $94, $95.
But he's got the upper hand
now,
Putin.
And 500, the point market went down 500 points. And we're going to have Larry Kudlow on in a little while to tell us what the heck is going on.
I don't know what's going on, but Rita Klavan is on the line with us right now. Ms. Klavan, you are the former governor's current attorney. We're getting her on the line right now. Oh, we're still waiting. So we got her on. Whoa. Okay, Ms. Klavan, how are you? How are you, ma'am?
I'm good. How are you, ma'am?
I'm doing well. So what is the status? We know that former governor is filing an ethics complaint against Tish James, the attorney general, for the sexual harassment report that she released. Tell us all about it.
Sure. Am I on live right now?
You are on live.
Wow. Okay.
Only a million people listening.
Oh, hello, John. How are you?
It's nice
to meet you.
Thank you.
So the status right now is that after the attorney general announced her report on August 3rd at that press conference, five district attorneys began investigating. And where we stand today is all five district attorneys announced that they were not going to bring any charges against the governor. And from the governor's perspective, this is what we have said all along, is that the governor didn't sexually harass anyone. He did not commit any crimes, any forcible touching, nothing. And it proves, you know, the points that we made back in August. So one is that you know, the attorney general's report had a lot of things to say, but the attorney general to this day still hasn't released all the evidence underlying the report. And I think that that speaks volumes because we pointed out in numerous presentations why what the attorney general described in the conduct doesn't rise to any violation of law, civil or criminal. We've said it over and over again. We've shown that. And what the attorney general did was this started in March of 2021 with two complainants. The attorney general went out and her office solicited. They actually had a hotline or website so people could call up and make complaints. And the attorney general, in coming up with the number 11, used such things as the governor kissing someone on the cheek at a wedding. The governor...
That was horrible. You know how many women I've kissed on the cheek in Greek and Italian weddings?
Should we set up a hotline, John?
I'm not going to comment on that, John.
Would you represent John?
We've got another Italian here. We've got Borough President Vito Fasella.
They don't just kiss women, they kiss men.
Borough President,
how many women have you kissed at Italian weddings?
About 10,000, I guess, over the years. That's a custom. It's tradition, and it's the way other people's wave or shake hands. Italians and Greeks hug and kiss. That's the way it is.
But in fairness, well, in politics, they do that as well.
Exactly. Well, you know, also included was the governor got a COVID test broadcast live. And he made a joke to the doctor administering the test who had on an N95 face mask, the plastic face shield, and the gown, saying, "You make that gown look good, doctor." That's one of the examples of the 11 that was in the report. And the numbers were meant, to stretch, to make people angry and believe that there were 11.
There's a lot of angry people. You're 100% right.
There are zero. But, John, what do you do about it?
At the time,
no one
wants
to question it.
There's nothing you can do about it. At the time, also, and I have to draw a comparison, the guy that just got convicted, the attorney, what's his name?
Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti, right.
Brought in all these women in front of Congresswoman Pelosi, brought them into the Congress of the United States of America, and they were going after this judge, who is probably the most straightest guy in the world.
Judge Kavanaugh.
Justice Kavanaugh now.
Right.
That is probably the most straightest guy in the world. And we're living in a society. Yeah, and at what point do you draw the line that there has got to be some evidence before you take a man and you try to ruin his reputation? And when you clear him, when you're ruining his reputation, it's on page one. Mm-hmm. When you clear him, it's on page 37.
John, a lie and, embellishment make its way around the world before the truth even leaves the state of New York. And what was so appalling to me as a lawyer, this is not the stage that I practice on. I'm a former federal prosecutor, defense lawyer. I'm used to getting the evidence, and I'm used to having things play out in a courtroom. And I'm used to a process, and I'm used to rules. This was a public political show. The attorney general drops a 165-page report on August 3rd, accusing the governor of all types of things. And then she refuses to give me access to any of the evidence. Okay? I wanted all the evidence. All I was given was the report. And they said, well, there's exhibits attached to the report. No, the exhibits were minuscule. They wouldn't give me the transcripts. They wouldn't give me the informal interview memos of the 138 people that weren't interviewed under with the transcription or under oath. And we asked for that. When the reason we're asking for that is, how do you respond to that? Because they announce a report. She does one of the most prejudicial press conferences I've ever seen in my life. And how do you respond when they don't give you access to the evidence? We didn't know a number of things that were in there. And then we went and we looked things up. Like, for instance, there was this woman, Virginia Limiatis, who worked for an energy company and claimed that at an event in 2017, so 4 years earlier, the governor was at this event. She was on a rope line, and that he touched her chest and breasts on her T-shirt, during his greeting of her, that she was shocked, humiliated, looked down, that he did it with his right hand. And what we did is, after we got the report, we went and we pulled all the photos from that event. It was an outdoor event in May of 2017. There wasn't a rope line. There was a group of people that were coming up and greeting the governor. There were people all around. We have three photos of his interaction with her. She's smiling and has her hand on his shoulder. His right hand, which is what the testimony was under oath that supposedly did this, was nowhere near her. And they're both laughing. And the interaction she testified to it bears no resemblance to what the photos from that event show. And to say that the governor would do this at an outdoor event with dozens of people around who follow him around with their cell phones taking videos, it's not believable. And, you know, how does the attorney general not include those pictures in the report? How did the attorney general's investigators not show those pictures to the governor in his own testimony and say, do you remember this event? Do you remember meeting this woman that day? They didn't do that. And there was a reason why the attorney general didn't want to give us the evidence. We've only gotten a sliver of it. But how do you go out in the world, tell everyone, you know, that the governor, and she still keeps saying it today, you know, the attorney general's office is into name calling and rhetoric, but they're not into facts and answering substantive questions. And every time I raise something, they won't answer a specific question. Why didn't they include those photos in the report?
Well, that's why you're on WABC, because, you know, we want to tell the truth and we want to tell it the way it is. And from day number one, I said, Lydia, you remember, I said that it can't be one-on-one. You know, there's nobody else in the room, and you did this, I did that. I mean, You cannot ruin people's reputation based on that kind of evidence.
Again, we are speaking with Ms. Rita Glavin. She is the attorney for former Governor Andrew Cuomo. Ms. Glavin, then why did he resign? And does he have any regrets
about
resigning?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you my opinion, because the state Senate and the state assembly said, if you don't resign, we're going to impeach you. Now,
And does he have any regrets about resigning?
Yes.
Well, I think that there was a recent interview that I've read that he's done where, you know, of course he said he regrets resigning, I think, on some levels. But let's go back to where we were. Because I remember, I mean, August 3rd is a day that will be seared in my brain as the governor's lawyer. This report was issued. We had no heads up it was coming. We had no heads up there was a press conference. We had actually asked the attorney general's investigators if we could talk to them before it was issued, if we could see a draft of it, which is something that does happen when you have, you know, the DOJ inspector general, when they're investigating individuals, they will let them see a draft of the report so they can respond before it's publicly issued. We got nothing. The report was in the press conference was meant to ambush us. After her press conference, now the report was 165 pages. Within 2 to 3 hours, everybody and their brother in politics is saying he has to resign. The members of the assembly, which, you know, would supposedly be a jury, they hadn't read the report, if they're telling the truth, because it's a lengthy report. But for them to start calling on him to resign or he will be impeached without them having even seen the evidence. They hadn't seen any of the transcripts. The attorney general interviewed 179 people, and she doesn't cite to anywhere near that in her report. They picked and chose what they were going to show the public. And there was so much exculpatory evidence. They don't include testimony from dozens of employees who worked with the governor, including the Manchin staff. They were interviewed informally. They didn't include a reference to those interviews where they're saying we did not see him act inappropriately. You know, this was not our experience. And all of that is relevant to the context here, particularly people who work at the Manchin with him, you know, the staff who are there every day, who are there, you know, they're cleaning up, they're around him.
Ms. Glavin.
Ms.
Glavin, Vito Fisella, he has a question for you. He's a Staten Island borough president.
Yeah, the borough president of the Staten Island?
Yes.
It's more of a, how do you distinguish? We've evolved in very many positive ways, let's say, in the last 50 years in our country. But one of the ways I think we've digressed is the lack of due process. You know, there's an old expression was shoot and ask questions later. And we've come to a point now in society where it's destroy and ask questions later in the court of public opinion. How do you square those two where, you know, people are asking to resign in within 2 or 3 hours? And here you are raising some legitimate issues of fact, not to mention law, that could potentially shine a light that what was said and declared just wasn't true.
And Ms. Glavin, a quick question. What does a former governor want to achieve right now? Like, what does he want to clear his name? Does he want to run for office again? Does he want to just tell
us? A lot of questions. Let me hit a couple points. Number one, on his resignation, the reason he resigned is because he'd already been convicted by the Assembly and by the Senate. He had no chance in an impeachment trial. And the governor, for as long as he has been in public service, knew that if he went through the impeachment trial, you know, the Assembly all but assured him they would impeach him based on the report without having, you know, reviewed the evidence and without having given him the evidence. We asked the Assembly, I might add, the Assembly Judiciary Committee, will you please share with us the evidence? And they said no. So we were not given the Assembly's evidence, which is just unbelievable. And so the governor had the choice of he could take the state through the next several months, because how impeachment works in New York is that the governor will be suspended if articles of impeachment are passed while the trial goes on. Can you imagine what that would have done to New York State, particularly as we went into the Omicron virus? And the governor made the decision. He's resigning not because he did something wrong. He's resigning because he's governor of the state that he loves, and we would have been paralyzed for months. Nothing would have gotten done. So that's on resignation. Second point, what do you do about due process? People have got to start, you know, being able to have thicker skin. Our politicians are all afraid of the third rail, which is any claim of sexual harassment or misconduct. And it's really, you know, tough for me. You know, I've been an attorney now for a number of decades. We all have stories, and people don't want to say anything. Women don't want to say anything. I understand that. You know, I and others and friends of mine have been in that position. But what has happened here was not sexual harassment, and you know, in drawing the line, nobody wants to be on the wrong side of Me Too. And my fear here is that Me Too is being weaponized by politicians or political activists to take people out that they would not be able to take out at the ballot box otherwise. What do you do about it? I can stand up, you know, and I can be the person in front of the tsunami saying, hold on. Let's just see the evidence first before we rush on this. But what happens is I'm accused of victim shaming, victim blaming, attacking women, which is not my purpose. I'm asking questions, and I'm doing what, you know, the founding fathers of our country said you do, which is you're not convicted based on, you know, someone claiming you did it. You got to go through this, and there has to be a process. Until politicians start getting some backbone, this is going to, you know, go on and on. And it's unfortunate because there are so many legitimate claims of harassment. And this, I think, cheapens them, what happened here and how this was handled. You might disagree, John and Vito. We can have a debate about whether someone, you know, did something improper, okay? The kiss on the cheek at the wedding. Yeah, somebody might not like that, John, if you come up and give him a kiss on the cheek at a wedding and say, what's that guy doing? Does it mean that you sexually harass them? No. But you and I can debate about whether it's proper and whether it ever was proper or whether it should be proper. You can debate about whether it's right for, you know, the boss to say, hey, what's going on? You got a date this weekend, et cetera. You know, particularly politicians who have people working for them who are, you know, going out and are working 24/7. I mean, it is...
No, you are correct, but we're almost out of time. We're almost out of time.
The last point is, what does he want to do?
What does he want to do? Tell us.
He wants the truth. That is his number one goal here. And he knew, and I knew, back in August and September, nobody wanted to hear it. Truth takes a while to rise to the top. And but for Sheriff Apple filing that criminal charge against him, that was rightly dismissed because it had no merit, we would not have gotten some evidence. But because we got some of that evidence, we were able to start seeing truth. And the governor is not going to back down on this. He's not going to let it go. If you were accused of something you didn't do, and you have an attorney general going around saying you're a serial sexual harasser, you bet they're not going to move on. You bet they're not going to. Truth is important. Truth matters. Evidence matters.
And that's what WABC stands for. Truth matters. And thank you for coming on. And keep fighting. Whatever you need from us, if you want to speak out again, we're available to you anytime.
Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate everybody.
Thank you. We're going to take a we're going to go to – okay. John Solomon just called in. Let's do this breaking news. Go ahead. With us today is my good friend John Solomon, and he has created justthenews.com with all the breaking news that's fit to talk about. And John Solomon is with you, with us. John, what's going on in the world?
Well, the beat of war drums is becoming louder in Eastern Europe. There is grave concern inside the Biden White House that war may be imminent, that there may be some form of an incursion into Russia in the next 72 hours. And they have asked all Americans to leave. And they said something that's the second time in a year I've heard this. Last August, they told Americans, if you don't get out of Afghanistan, we might not be able to get you out. And today they said the same thing about Americans in Ukraine. We might not be able to get you out if you're if you don't get out now. And so there is both sides are looking like they're posturing for some sort of a conflict, which would be bad for the world. And then downstream from that, the markets are acting concerned. Oil's up. Gold is way up. Gold's up 22% today as people look to invest in something that might be a little more stable and safer in a wartime period. And I think that's more than anything else in Washington right now. That is what everyone is talking about. I had a couple members of Congress saying that they think what's going to happen, based on the intel briefings they got today, is that Russia will go in, create a small incursion, get rid of the current government, put a Russian-friendly government, and then get right out. So some intelligence is floating around that that might be going on. But a pretty tense moment in Washington on the foreign policy front.
What do you hear in China with the end of the Olympics coming on, and what are they doing?
Well, we saw this extraordinary show of unanimity between Putin and Xi at the beginning of the Olympics. Clearly, China and Russia have decided they're stronger together against the United States than apart. And I think that also has some Western diplomats and intelligence officials I've been talking to concerned, because at the end of the day, it gives us fewer levers to go. In the Cold War era, we could play China off against the Soviet Union, and that always was a benefit. That opportunity seems to have waited away. And if you take a look at it, China also has gone around the world, whether it's in Africa, Latin America, buying the way into the hearts and minds of what used to be many great allies of the United States. And so the Biden administration finds itself a little bit more isolated and potentially fighting a two-headed monster with China and Russia more aligned now than we've seen them in a very long time.
Breaking news, WABC.
And the White House just announcing that all Americans in Ukraine have 24 to 48 hours to get out now. And if they don't get out, they're kind of on their own, and they have to assume a high risk that they could get stuck in Ukraine.
That happened in Afghanistan, and I feel bad for the people that didn't get out.
I hope it's not an Afghanistan part two. Coming up, we will be speaking with Larry Kudlow. Of course, we'll be talking more about the Russia-Ukraine crisis. Could we be on the brink of another war? Oh, God, I hope not. We'll be right back.
A common sense recap of the day's biggest stories. It's John Katzimatidis and Cats at Night on 77 WABC.
With us now is one of our country's top economists. We have with us Larry Kudlow, who has the number one show on Fox Business and the number one show on Saturdays on WABC Radio on Saturday mornings from 10 to 1. Larry Kudlow, the market went down 500 points today. The State Department is putting out warnings to all our citizens in the Ukraine. What say you?
Well, look at this sort of almost out of the blue war fever going on. Presumably, the intelligence people have been picking up messages in Russia that they are going to invade imminently. They're talking about air bombing. They're talking about cruise missiles and troop movements. We don't know if any of this is true or whether it's hard facts. Biden is going to meet with Putin tomorrow, or he's going to have a phone call with Putin, because diplomacy has broken down. All the European diplomacy with Russia has broken down. So there's a lot of Ukraine war fever. Look, you know, I talked to General Jack Keane on the show tonight for a while. Putin, Biden has got to say to Putin, we are cutting you off from the dollar-based international banking system. We are cutting off your banks. We are cutting off your central banks. We're going to take you out of the SWIFT payments mechanism system immediately. Immediately. Stop saying if you invade. Now is the time for him to declare banking sanctions, which will do severe damage to Russia, which is the second or third rate financial power.
Larry, but all did Putin say he was going to invade, or is it just all BS from intelligence agencies?
And, we don't know.
And you know the last time the intelligence agencies told the truth, and you've been in government forever. When was the last time you've seen an intelligence agency tell it the way it is?
I wouldn't denigrate the intel agencies like that. I would say their batting average is decent. They're not always right. They're just picking up stuff from Russia. That's what Jack Keane says. I mean, look, I just think that Biden should have told this to Putin. We should have put sanctions on Putin the moment he put 150,000 troops in. His diplomacy has failed, and the European diplomacy has failed. So it's time to step up and be tough. He's got to be tough. And look, if Russia goes in, he'll know it's going to be very costly. It's also going to be very costly because the Ukrainians have a strong army. They got 500,000 people, and they will fight like hell. Look, I don't think, John, this is the big story. The big story this week was the explosion of the CPI inflation report, up 7.5%. So this is a gigantic tax on the middle class. By some estimates, $250 a month or $3,000 a year on middle-income people who drive cars, use gasoline, go to the grocery stores, et cetera, et cetera. And the trouble is, the administration is in denial. Janet Yellen says the inflation rate is going to be 2% by the end of the year. I'm here to tell you the inflation rate has not yet peaked. And the money supply is still growing. And the Fed does not have an action plan. And the administration is nominating several people. One's a greenie who wants climate change. The other one wants the black unemployment rate, and she wants slavery reparations. They're putting in ultra doves at a time when we've got to take stern medicine. I'm talking about an increase of 50 basis points in each of the next several Fed meetings until they see some signals that inflation is coming down. Probably the best signal is the commodity indexes. Although oil went to $94 a barrel today, they got to see commodity indexes come down. The money supply has got to start coming down. The balance sheet has got to start shrinking. Otherwise, this inflation, I mean, it's going to go on for the rest of this year, but it could go on for many years if they don't take strict action right away. To me, the inflation tax on the middle class is the single biggest issue. And, John, it will continue to destroy Biden's presidency.
Well, Larry, we were together a couple of nights ago, and we talked about that right now the prices you see at the gas stations and the prices you see in the grocery stores are from $75 oil 45 days ago, 50 days ago. Now, at $95, you're going to see price increases in the month of February and price increases in March. And my only comment was, fasten your seatbelt. Because yeah. Prices are going to go up another 7% in the next 60, 90 days. And Janet Yellen, I think she's not telling us the truth. It sounds like the movie Trading Places.
Well, it's funny there. You got to look at the right things. I mean, this is important. You know, they're still trying to blame this on the pandemic. It's not about the pandemic. It's not about Omicron. It's the fact that we've spent way too much federal spending, $900 billion in December 2020, $1.9 trillion last March and April. and the Federal Reserve pumped in the money supply to finance it. That's the root cause. Now, we have saved America and killed the bill. BBB is dead. Big government socialism is dead. But the Federal Reserve, which doesn't want to look at the money supply, they said that. Jay Powell said that was 40 years ago. He's wrong. We've never seen anything like this. We've seen money growth now comparable to the 1970s. They have got to end that. And if they take little tiny steps, little one-quarter point steps, it's not going to do the trick. They need some shock therapy here. And by the way, the markets can take this. The markets can take this. Profits are doing very, very well. But you've got this middle-class tax hike because of 7.5% inflation. And I agree with you, all these prices, not just oil, it's food, it's gasoline, it's things related to
clothing,
cars,
anything
travel
that,
services,
and anything that a truck has to move.
Anything that a truck has to move. It's also hitting services. Look, hotels and restaurants, they're getting the business, and they're going to get more business as these economies completely open up and prices are rising. And here's the thing. Wages are rising, but the trouble is wages are not rising fast enough. Prices are rising more than wages. I mean, I'm glad wages are going up for the middle class, but the trouble is, in real terms,
they're not
going to
go up 7%.
Yeah, they can't make it there. Wages are rising about 5.5%. Inflation is rising about 7.5%. So in real terms, you're working harder, but you're losing money.
Who does it affect, Larry Kudlow? It affects the poor and the middle class. They're the ones being hurt by Washington. It's not the people that are wealthy. That, like the White House says, oh, we're only going to hurt the people that are wealthy. It's hurting the poor and the middle class.
Yeah, I agree 100%, John.
Larry Kudlow, what was your reaction to hearing President Biden call Lester Holt a wise guy and then say that he was going to combat inflation regarding the supply chain, and he never mentioned the XL pipeline?
Yeah, he never mentioned the XL pipeline. He never mentioned the money supply. I mean, he doesn't get it. He's being very badly advised. He's got, Lydia, he's got too many left-wingers around him. You know, they have been in denial about this for months and months and months. You know, I'll agree that a year ago, there was some pandemic inflation and the supply shortages. That's washed away. There may be supply shortages because of the trucking problem. But you know what? All prices are rising. You understand? Not just some goods that are being delivered by trucks, but you look at the price index of thousands of prices, all of them are rising. The diffusion of price hikes is vast. It's everywhere. I haven't seen this in 40 years. So if you don't understand the root cause, which is too much money chasing too few goods, then you're not going to solve the problem. And right now, they don't have a clue about the root cause. And that's why I say, save America, kill inflation. But this is going to destroy Biden's presidency if it isn't already dead now.
Well, Jimmy Carter is thanking Joe Biden for being president.
He's not officially not the worst president we've ever had, right?
Larry Kudlow, thank you for coming on, and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Ambassador Bolton to find out what's going on in Ukraine and get his opinions.
John Katzenmatidis, 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Cats at Night show. Boy, I am concerned. I know you're not worried. Well, you're worried about what's going on in Ukraine.
I don't think there's going to be a war, but let's see what happens. I want to see what Ambassador Bolton's going to say.
Well, I want you to hear what Jake Sullivan said. This is the National Security Advisor. This is what he said just a short time ago, number 12.
We encourage all American citizens who remain in Ukraine to depart immediately. We want to be crystal clear on this point. Any American in Ukraine should leave as soon as possible, and in any event, in the next 24 to 48 hours. And the threat is now immediate enough. If you stay, you are assuming risk with no guarantee that there will be any other opportunity to leave.
Oh, my God. No other opportunity to leave. On the line with us right now, Ambassador John Bolton. How are you, sir?
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, what do you think, Ambassador?
Well, I don't think there's any change in the situation from times we've discussed before, where the White House and the UK and others have said that the threat of Russian invasion is imminent. Now, they've torqued the warning level up, but I'm not sure based on what, other than continued additional maneuverings on the Russian side of the border. And I would say this, obviously none of us have seen the intelligence, they have, and I'm not imputing any bad motives here at all. But I think it's important to understand that when you look at what they're doing, there's a kind of conscious parallel with Afghanistan. They're fighting the last war over again, as the saying about generals go. They fear that things could go bad in Ukraine, and I think they could. You have to acknowledge that. And they don't want this time to be said, you've left Americans behind, you didn't plan for the withdrawal. And when you're consumed with avoiding a prior mistake, sometimes you can overstate things. Because if it turns out that the Russians don't come across the border in the next few days, you've got a danger of having cried wolf once when it doesn't come true. And I think Putin, again, as he's been weighing and doing cost-benefit analysis for months now, will take this into account, and it will affect how he performs. But it puts the administration, ironically, more into Putin's hands. They've said the timing could be within 24 to 48 hours. So we're going to have confusion, mass efforts at hotels and big urban areas for people to try and get out. And if nothing happens, they risk having diminished the efficacy of the warning.
Yeah, well, absolutely correct. And they're comparing it to, some networks are comparing it to the warning in Afghanistan that, well, Afghanistan actually happened.
What I'm seeing online is that U.S. officials anticipate a horrific, bloody campaign that begins with 2 days of aerial bombardment and electronic warfare, followed by an invasion with the possible goal of regime change. Ambassador Bolton, what are you seeing and hearing?
Well, that is the high-end sort of full-up invasion of Afghanistan. But I have to say, I think most Americans are probably in Kiev and the other big cities. They're not out in the border regions near Belarus and Russia. And when you talk about bombardments and missile attacks, are the Russians really going to do that to Kiev? I would be skeptical.
I would be very skeptical.
Putin. But what? That's not what Putin wants. I think we've talked about this on the show before. John said, no ifs, ands, or buts. What do you think he's going to do? I think he wants a piece of Ukraine. I think he wants the Russian-speaking areas in the eastern and southern parts of the country. I don't think he's going to risk the whole thing. And I think what he believes he can do, rightly or wrongly, because he's not been deterred by Biden's threats, is he can grab that territory quickly and at a relatively low cost. That's the risk.
Ambassador Bolton, do you think that Putin feels empowered because Biden's first executive order was shutting down that XL pipeline? Now we have to get our oil from Russia and OPEC. And then on top of it, we empowered him even further with Nord Stream 2. And then Biden, of course, threatened to cancel Nord Stream 2. What's your take on it? Because it's kind of, I mean, it doesn't seem sudden, but it does seem sudden.
Well, and don't forget the catastrophic withdrawal from Afghanistan, which looks terribly weak to Putin. And I think that as I said before, that's what's coloring the administration's warning. The effort the Biden administration has been making is to prevent the attack by threatening punishment, in effect, if Russia goes ahead. And I don't think those warnings are viewed in Moscow as credible. They heard the same thing in 2014 when the Russians took the east, part of the eastern area of the country and annexed the Crimea and suffered almost no economic sanctions in consequence after they did it. So for a lot of reasons, the credibility of the threats is not high. And Biden has also already said he's not going to use U.S. military force against a Russian invasion. He took that off the table. Now, we don't want a war, but when he gave it up without getting anything back, I think that was a mistake. So if deterrence fails, then you have to hope that all the rhetoric about NATO unity and how we're all going to stick together and how it's going to be devastating sanctions comes true. But that's when the Europeans have to perform. They have to move from, as does Biden, they have to move from rhetoric and threats to actions. And I'm worried we're going to have a lack of performance there, too.
Well, Ambassador, I think we might wake you up early on Sunday morning to see if anything is happening.
Do you think it's possible this could be a wag the dog type of situation? John, explain your theory.
Well, the wag the dog situation is always possible where they look like they're doing their job. They look like they're defending the world. And it's just
to BS. Cover themselves for their own exposure.
How did Trump say that's a
what?
Trump said
they're full of crap.
We need a few laughs. You know, we need a few laughs on a Friday afternoon.
Well, John, this is what I don't understand.
Governor,
wagging the dog. Biden hasn't acted as if he's wagging anything. In other words, he's just sitting around waiting to see what happens and saying, well, Russia can't break the agreement. Well, Russia breaks agreements all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't see it as wagging the dog as much as an.
I'm still mad at Biden for last week giving back Iran $26 billion that they're probably using terrorist activities.
Well, that's another sign of weakness. I mean, Putin obviously is a party to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, and what he's watched for a year is Biden make one concession after another to Iran in order to get them back in. See, I think Putin is much better at playing brinkmanship, to recall a Cold War term, than Biden is. He's going further. It looks like he's going to do more. He's inspiring more concern in the White House, more concern in France and Germany. It doesn't necessarily mean he's prepared to go through with it, but he wants to see if his weak-minded opponents can be rattled. And I'm afraid the odds are on his side. He's already heard from Macron. He's going to hear from Chancellor Schultz. You know, these are people who would love to find a deal and give Putin strategic concessions to avoid this threat of warfare in Ukraine. The strategic concessions weakening NATO, limiting what NATO can do, can have much bigger consequences for the alliance as a whole.
Well, we got Putin's response to Biden giving him a call tomorrow about this.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Well, I'd like to hear that call. It may be about that long, actually.
Ambassador Bolton, I may be calling you early on Sunday. I hope not. I hope there is no war. We do not need another war, but we'll see what happens. Thank you so much for everything you've done for our country and continue to do for our country.
Well, thanks. I'm available to you anytime.
Thank you. Let's take a break, and when we come back, let's talk about a few things internally. Vito, you have a few ideas from Staten Island and Governor. Let's take the quick break.
You're commuting home with Cats at Night. Now here's John Katsimatidis on 77 WABC.
Welcome back.
We're back.
Yes.
We are back. And a few interesting things. Tomorrow on Saturday, we have the Anthony Weiner, Curtis Sliwa.
And we put
a big fight.
We already put a poll up on WABCradio.com. Who do you think will win? Curtis Sliwa, the big debate, the big matchup?
Or Anthony Weiner?
Of course I think Curtis. Hello.
It's on Saturday afternoon between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock worldwide on WABCradio.com worldwide and 770 in the tri-state area. And
you know, we got a
lot versus right.
We got a lot
versus
of,
right.
We got a lot of criticism from people saying, how dare you have Anthony Weiner on? And John,
now we got a lot of criticism from some people saying about the lawyer for Andrew Cuomo. But all I said is people deserve to know the truth. And we only dealt with one subject. We don't know about any other subject.
Well, Rita Glavin was not Cuomo's attorney for the nursing home crisis.
She's his attorney
for the sexual harassment allegations.
And
that's why we limited the scope of the discussion specifically on the ethics violation.
And if one of the violations at an Italian wedding, you kiss somebody on the cheek.
And that's not belittling women that have been legitimately sexually harassed.
Judge Richard Weinberg, because that was one
of the exhibits, by the way.
Well, Judge Richard Weinberg. You were Supreme Court Justice. If it came in your court, what would you do?
It's very simple. Ms. Glavin came on for a particular purpose, for a particular subject matter. That was the defense of the former governor against these allegations. And he wants to come forward and wants to clear his name. We gave her the opportunity to present and that side of the picture.
Once it clears his name, and it should not be on page 37 of the New York
Times.
I'll
tell you this. I'm a former governor who underwent an investigation. And
you,
what
you had those Yankee tickets.
Yeah, I know.
And you couldn't even see the game.
Crime of the century. But I would, at no point did my lawyer or anyone else ever really get a chance to publicly speak in my own defense. And that's why, John and Lydia, I'm so glad you gave Ms. Glavin the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and now, for those people who said, well, why don't you talk about other subjects, including what Governor Cuomo did or did not do with respect to the nursing homes, that was not the subject of that interview, and she does not represent him for that purpose.
That's exactly right. And Vito Fasella, you.
I think the essence of this show and John's acquisition here is getting the truth out. And we have come, and I said earlier, we've come to a point in society where you destroy others without giving the opportunity to speak. So let's get the truth out there. Let's get everybody's opinion out there and let individuals make their own decisions.
And Vito, that's one thing I thought was kind of funny about the truth is she did complain that people condemn the governor without hearing the evidence. But when the story came out about the Attorney General, okay, Eric Schneiderman,
Dr. Peter Michalos is calling in.
We had the governor calling for his resignation 10 minutes later.
Let's go to Dr. Peter Michalos. With us today is Dr. Peter Michalos, and he has an update. What the heck is going on with COVID? Dr. Peter, how are you?
I'm doing great, John. And tonight I wanted to talk about COVID, a very interesting aspect of COVID that nobody's actually really talked about. And now we have some real hard data with a study from the University of Miami that looked at 75,000 patients. What we're finding is that vaccines, after may provide a generalized immune boost, may protect against other viral infections. So what does that mean? It seems that the COVID vaccine may actually end up giving some general protection against the regular flu. And that's one of the reasons why we may be seeing a lower amount of regular flu. The University of Miami study showed that people who had a flu vaccine, for example, had a 20% lower risk of ending up in the ICU. That's a big statistic in a large population. 40% had less blood clots, 45% had less sepsis, which is an infection that spreads in the blood, and 58% had less strokes. So what are we finding out? That it seems that taking the flu vaccine or the COVID vaccine revs up the immune system, and you get some cross protection with B cells, T cells, and natural killer cells, in addition to the antibodies generated by the vaccine. And to confirm this finding, the Journal of Nature, which is one of the prestigious journals in medicine, found that people over 65, that people who were vaccinated for the flu had a 24% lower chance of getting COVID and a 28% lower chance of severe disease. So these findings are going to be very, very important as we move forward. And as one of the other doctors on the show has discussed, the new Novavax vaccine, which will work by a different mechanism, and some of these new multivariant vaccines, just like we have every year a flu vaccine that might contain three or four different strains, we're going to start seeing better protection, and we are going to see a lot of good things, I think, around March, as we talked about a few months ago. We predicted, based on the downward trajectory of the current virus with the antivirals, the monoclonal antibodies like the GSK, which is working great against the Omicron and Delta variant. And I think slowly things will burn out. We still will see cases, people get sick, but it'll be more like the numbers will be closer to what we see with the flu every year. But I wanted to share with the audience this fascinating news, how the COVID vaccines may give protection against the flu and the flu vaccine may give protection against COVID. So this is interesting. Thanks.
Doctor, the old adage, no cure for the common cold. The common cold was a flu type of situation. So we might have a solution, right?
Yes, I think that some of the research that's going to come out of this because of Operation Warp Speed and the accelerated science and looking against attacking these coronavirus cold viruses is going to be, we're going to have much better even flu vaccines for the future. And I think that once again, the United States is the leader in helping us get out of this pandemic.
Dr. Peter Michalos, thank you so much for keeping all Americans informed, and God bless you and God bless America. Vito, we're at the end of the show. Vito, you were supposed to spend more time on stuff for Staten Island. Tell us real fast.
Well, I don't own the station or the studio, so I do as
I'm
told.
You own the mic. You own the mic right now.
Two things. I agree with Kudlow that the inflation is a bigger story than Russia long term. And secondly, we're trying to get the Staten Island ferry that Peter Davidson and Colin Jost bought to stay on Staten Island.
It's got to stay on Staten Island because that was the conditions I thought.
Well, I don't know if it is was, but nevertheless, we'll do everything we can to get it there.
Borough president of Staten Island.
We will declare, we'll commandeer. We have a Navy. We're actually going to commandeer the ship.
Well, Kim Kardashian will be one of the first passengers, maybe. She has her own flotation device. Her butt.
It is now 6 o'clock.
Thank you. God bless New York and God bless America.